All right, it is 1:30. I am Commissioner Robert Pirro, Commissioner at the Utah State Tax Commission, and I am now serving as Chair of the State Farmland Evaluation Advisory Committee. I replaced Commissioner Darcy Dixon Pignanelli, and she stepped into my office just before lunch, she said, to express to the committee how she misses you and how much she enjoyed working with this group for as many years as she did. So I'm doing that. We're gathered here today as a committee on October 2nd, 2014, at the office of the State Tax Commission, located at 210 North 1950 West in Salt Lake City, Utah, at 1:30 p.m. in room 1025. One of the first things I think I want to do is go around the table here, because I think all the board members are here at the table. And let's go around. Dr. Hurst, we'll start with you. And then if you just say a little bit about how you got here and what your function is.
My name is Donald Snyder, and I'm a professor at Utah State University in the Applied Economics Department. I was selected by President Albrecht as the representative from the university to serve on this committee. I also am responsible for the preparation of the report for this committee.
Hey, I'm Robert Lee. I'm also in the Applied Economics Department at Utah State, and I'm a research assistant, and I assist Dr. Snyder with the report.
Who's going to be presenting the report?
I will be.
Rex Larson from Spanish Fork. I'm the representative from the agricultural community here on the board.
Thank you.
Greg Garb, Duchesne County Assessor, Utah Assessors Association representative.
Sterling Brown with Utah Farm Bureau ex officio board member.
I'm Scott Erickson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Agriculture and Food.
And he is taking Kyle Stevens' place, who retired.
Hello.
So welcome. Now let's have everyone in the audience introduce themselves, and let's start with my two fellow commissioners.
I'm Michael Craven, Tax Commissioner. I'm here to give you what's somebody referred to as the Reader's Digest version of the Open and Public Meetings Act training.
I'm the new chair, Commissioner John Valentine.
Denny Lytle, I'm the Director of the Property Tax Division.
Greg Jolly, I'm an assistant director.
Gerald Osborne, I'm the real property manager.
And let's see, I want everybody that's in the room on record, so why don't you go ahead and.
I'm Security Officer Gavin Post with Chapman Security.
Okay, and we only have one more member.
Well, I'm Krista Johnson, I'm the executive assistant.
All right, that's everyone. Thank you. The first thing on the agenda is the annual training to comply with the Open and Public Meeting Act. And my fellow commissioner, Michael Cragen, does such a fabulous job at this, and he offered to come and do that for us. So I'm going to turn the time over to Commissioner Cragen.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation to be here. Denny calls it the Reader's Digest version. I prefer to call it the Lagoon version, so keep your hands and feet inside and hold on tight and have fun. All right, you'll notice that on this slide I've indicated that I updated the presentation as of Monday of this week. The legislature generally makes some changes every year to the Open and Public Meetings Act, and this presentation reflects the changes that were made in the most recent session. The reason that we have an Open and Public Meetings Act is because the legislature has made it clear that the state of Utah, its political subdivisions, and all of its agencies are going to do their work in the open. It's the people's business, and they ought to be able to know what's being done in their behalf. And so we have a definition in the statute that says that an open meeting is open to the public unless it's closed. And we do have a former very senior legislator here, but at this point I usually insert the joke that saying only a legislature could come up with a definition like that. It's open unless it's closed, but that's the law, is that we have it open. Well, now we have a definition of what is a meeting, and it is a convening of a public body with a quorum present. And I've highlighted those three terms because I want to focus on each of them. Convening a meeting is where the public body is called together by someone who has the authority to do it so that they can act on those things over which they have power. I was thinking about a meeting that I was summoned to at the Capitol one time about 3 years ago by a legislative staff member who said they wanted all four tax commissioners present, and we were very nervous about that because, as we'll talk about later, three members of the tax commission constitutes a quorum, and so we try to avoid non-public meetings where we have all three of us present. But as I was preparing for this today, I realized that legislative staffer didn't have the authority to call us together, so we weren't having a meeting. Now, a public body has these five tests. It's the state or one of its subdivisions created by the state law, and that can be anything from the state constitution down to resolution. It has to have two or more persons. They're supported by the tax revenue of the state, and they have some authority to do something that is the public's business. Well, if you think about the state tax commission, it actually meets all of the tests. We're part of the executive branch of the state government. We have an administrative role. We are created by the Constitution. There are four of us. Our whole purpose is the tax revenue of the state government. And we have a list of authority there. So yes, we are a public body. The four tax commissioners, though, are not the only executives that run this agency. We have an executive director also, and there's a very clear statutory division of powers. As you look at the executive director, he is not a public body, so he is not subject to the Open and Public Meetings Act, and it's because the executive director is only one person, and that's what the law says, is there will be an executive director, and everybody else who works for him is subordinate to him. So the Open and Public Meetings Act doesn't apply to him. We've got a couple of other public bodies here at the Tax Commission. One is the Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division Advisory Board, five persons. They meet all of the tests. This body, the Farmland Evaluation Advisory Committee, is also a public body, again, because there's more than one person and they meet all of the other tests. Okay, back to our definition of meeting. When you convene a public body and you've got a quorum present, then that is a meeting and you have to follow some rules. Well, we have to look at what is a quorum. The law says that a quorum is a simple majority unless some other statute says otherwise. The reason that I put that in here is because the tax commission, the statute actually specifies that three members are required to be able to constitute, to conduct business. Back in January of 2013, for about 6 weeks, we only had three members of the tax commission because Mark Johnson had retired at the end of December. And a lot of people were very nervous that if we had two commissioners together that we'd be having a problem. Well, the statute says three members constitute a quorum, so the simple majority rule does not apply when you're talking about the tax commission. The statute that creates the Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division Advisory Board says that a majority is, and so there is a statute that mirrors the basic rule. For this body, the Farmland Committee, there is no statute that says what the quorum is, so we default to the Open and Public Meeting Act rule, simple majority. Anytime you've got three members, that's a quorum. All right, here's what you have to do when you're gonna have an open meeting. Each year, the body has to make an annual notice of its regular meeting schedule in January generally, but really we should do in December. The Tax Commission publishes a notice saying, here are the days that we're gonna meet in the next calendar year. We've adopted a resolution for electronic participation in the meeting. The Tax Commission has actually adopted an administrative rule that governs electronic participation in your meetings. So your body has not had to adopt a resolution, but we do have a rule in place. Krista always posts a notice at least 24 hours in advance, has an agenda, sends it off to at least one reporter and puts it online. If you look at your agenda, you'll see there are some things there that are labeled action item. That's how we comply with that requirement, that it identifies topics for consideration with reasonable specificity. We try to give a good description of what's happening and make the public aware of what it is you're actually going to vote on. Everything else is just informational. It doesn't require a decision by the body. We have to record the meetings. Last year's change to the by the legislature required that Krista post those recordings on the website so that people can listen to them at any time that they want to. The last item here is the new item that came out of the legislative session this year, and that is that anybody who presents electronic information has to give a copy to the committee so that it can be included in the record. I emailed this presentation to Krista on Monday so that she had a copy to include in the record of this meeting, and she'll post it on the website along with the record of this meeting. In addition to all of those things, as soon as the meeting is over, or within 30 days of the meeting, a set of pending minutes have to be published, but they have a notice on them saying they could be subject to change because you all probably won't meet again until this time next year to approve your minutes from this meeting. So those meetings will be out there within 30 days. People can read them, but it'll be next year when you approve them. And if you make any changes, it's the approved minutes that become the official record, not those pending minutes that may have been floating out there for a little less than a year. And then again, it has to be posted on the website along with any materials. Now, it is possible for a public body to have a closed meeting, but it is not required for a public body to have a closed meeting. That's why I've highlighted the word may here. And there are some requirements that are some things that you can discuss. In fact, these are the only things that can be discussed in a closed meeting. Of this list of permitted discussions, I believe that only character, professional competence, or physical or mental health of an individual applies to this public body. One member of your body is actually appointed by the other four members. And so if for some reason Rex decided he wasn't going to serve anymore, and you all needed to recruit somebody else to serve on it, and you needed to visit with that person in private or have a private discussion about whoever the person was that was going to replace him, you could have a closed meeting if you wanted to. Again, you're not required to. As far as I can tell, this public body does not have any authority to do any of the other things on there, so please don't ever go into a closed meeting to discuss any of those things. All right. To have a closed meeting, you have to start in an open meeting. You have to declare why it is that you're going to go into closed meeting, where you're going to be, and there has to be a roll call vote by the members of the public body to be able to move into a closed meeting. Once you're in a closed meeting, you can exclude anybody except for people who are needed for the closed meeting discussion. However, you can't make any decisions in the meeting. And having someone stay and take minutes is optional. The reason that that's optional is because, with two exceptions, you must make a recording of a closed meeting. Now, one of the exceptions actually is discussing the character, professional competence, physical or mental health of an individual. So if you choose to do that, then the chairman would need to sign an affidavit, a sworn statement, saying that that's the only thing that the body discussed if you don't have a recording going. And again, you all don't have the authority to deploy security personnel, devices, or systems, so you don't need to worry about that. Now, there are some things that by statute are not a meeting. A chance gathering, and I was thinking about this, and I thought, well, maybe if Orrin Hatch held a town hall meeting out in the basin and all five of you happened to just show up there because you wanted to hear what the senator had to say, that would not be a meeting of this public body, because that's a chance meeting that, what, four of you drove a long way to get there for that meeting. So it's probably just a chance meeting. A social gathering, when the tax commission gets its staff together every year at Christmas time and has a holiday party and all four of us are there eating turkey, that's a social gathering. It's not a meeting. And we can't use that social gathering as a way to get around the Open Public Meetings Act. We cannot make any decisions by doing that. There is one other exclusion from the meeting definition, and I'm going to give Commissioner Valentine the credit for this one because he's the one who carried the bill to set it up for us. The Utah State Tax Commission is exempted from the Open and Public Meetings Act when it's discussing confidential tax matters, and that came about because we have state and federal laws that govern what the tax commission has to keep private that we collect from taxpayers. But on the other hand, we have this Open and Public Meetings Act that says that everything we do has to be done in public. And so we had to have a statutory exemption made for when we were dealing with confidential tax matters. And these are, here's a list of the things that we actually do not talk about in public meetings. However, we have to have a recording of the meeting. So in case anybody ever had any concern about what we discussed in those meetings, a judge could review them if necessary. The Open and Public Meetings Act is a lot like learning English. You might remember the old rule in English that it's I before E except after C, or when pronounced A as in neighbor and way. So you've got a rule and then you've got a bunch of exceptions. Well, we have an exception to the exception, and that is that we don't have to record an initial hearing because we have another statute that specifically says there will be no record made of an initial hearing. And then we don't record our deliberations because we have a Supreme Court decision that has since been incorporated into statute that says that deliberations are also not meetings and subject to the Open and Public Meetings Act. Same act has a bunch of miscellaneous things. This is one of my favorite ones here, that electronic transmissions are not prohibited. This section of the code came about because somebody had introduced a law in the legislature trying to prohibit members of a public body sending text messages back and forth to each other. By the time that bill got through the legislature, passed and signed by the governor, it came out as electronic transmissions are not prohibited. So you do have the authority to remove a disruptive person. I'm guessing Robert's expecting someone, because that's why he's asked our security officer to be here with us today. The public can sue a public body to void any final action taken in violation of the Open and Public Meetings Act. If I were your attorney, I would advise you to post an agenda 24 hours later, have a meeting, and do it right that time, the lawsuit goes away. Because all they can do is overturn your final action, and if you do it the right way, then there's nothing to overturn. If you were to go make it a habit of avoiding the Open and Public Meetings Act, the public could sue to force you to do that too. I talked about the judges. They have the ability to be able to review closed meeting recordings. In camera means that the judge would just listen to it him or herself to determine whether or not there had been a violation of the Open and Public Meetings Act. And if for some reason you all twist Krista's arm to make her do something that violates the law, not only will she go to jail, so will you. The last thing is that every year the chair of a public body has to make sure that the public body has Open and Public Meetings Act training, and congratulations, you survived again.
Does anyone have any questions for Commissioner Craig? Well, I know Michael has a very busy schedule, and if he wants to be excused, you are.
All right, thank you. Thank you all for letting me come.
Thank you. All right, moving down to item number 3 on the agenda, it is time for public comment. Any members of the public that would like to address the body here, they have 3 minutes. And I don't see anyone from the public here, so I think we can move on to the next item, which is approval of the draft minutes of the November 12th, 2013 meeting. Have you all reviewed those? Any comments or changes? I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Okay, Mr. Larson moved to approve.
Second.
Seconded by Dr. Snyder. All in favor?
Aye.
Sorry.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item 5, presentation of the draft farmland evaluation report by Utah State University on several classifications of land in agriculture use in the various areas of the state. This is the real reason why we're here, and we are anxiously awaiting the report. So, Dr. Snyder, would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Commissioner. There are some changes that we are recommending due to price and yield changes that occurred in 2013. We dropped the earlier year and added 2013 to it. These changes are listed in our report, but to summarize, irrigated land values decreased slightly, primarily due to decreases in the prices received by producers for alfalfa. Alfalfa is the dominant crop in the state and virtually every county, and any change that happens with alfalfa pretty much determines what else happens in that in the county. The largest decreases were seen in Millard, Weber, and Cache counties. The average overall decline for all counties was 4.7%. And we will go ahead and talk about what that means in terms of actual value. Orchard cropland increased in value approximately 5% throughout the state due to an increase in both apple yield and prices. It was a phenomenal year on for apples. And apples are such a huge part of the fruit industry in the state that they have a tendency to dominate what happens. Then the next one is meadow cropland. Meadowland values were negatively impacted by the decreasing value of feeds, forages, and livestock. Now keep in mind when we say decreases in the value of livestock, we're talking about prices from 2009 to 2013. Anything that happens in 2014 won't be reflected until next year's report. Dry cropland or dry land farms, decreases are recommended due to price decreases in grain and alfalfa prices. Grazing land values were also negatively impacted by lower alfalfa prices and low precipitation levels in most places and decreased livestock prices. And no change is recommended for any of the non-production land. I'd like to call your attention to a couple of additions that have been added in the report this year for clarification purposes. I have listed the actual site where the budgets can be found. It's on page 2. The bottom, the website there, and you would go under budgets and then you would look under crops, and counties with up-to-date budgets or reasonably up-to-date budgets will, you will go ahead and find those in a combined report. We used to go ahead and list alfalfa separate from wheat, from barley, but now we have a combined report that lists all of them, and so you're going to see, I think it's 2006 is the year that the last year that those budgets were updated, I think so, and then you'll see, and so when you look at that, don't be dismayed, because the top portion is actually the crop values, and that has been done in 2011, 2012, in 2013. So we really probably need to get rid of those others off that website so there's not any confusion about it. The second thing I would like to call your attention to is on page 3. That is that the 2012 Ag Census was released this summer. It was too late for us to incorporate all the county level crop changes. That will be done next year. We were hoping to have it done for this year's report, but it didn't, we didn't get access to it until it was too late. To review the general approach that's adopted, we know that land values are very, very difficult to come by that reflect only ag production, because there are so many other things that are involved in land, whether it's a certain location that brings a premium, or the type of land that brings a premium, could be the amenities on that property. So there are several different ways that we could look at that, because the markets would be so thin for rentals or even sales. We have opted to go ahead and adopt a partial budgeting approach where we budget the net returns to the crops, and then we discount those back to a present time period, and that then becomes the value. We update those costs and prices. The prices are updated on a five-year average, so are the yields updated on a five-year average. The costs are not updated on a five-year average because there's not a consistent cost record that allows us to do that. And because costs typically are going up, you would always end up being behind. And so we use the most recent crop cost data, which would be for 2013. If we go to page 7, you can see some of the average prices received for many of the crops that are produced. Virtually every crop had a reduced price relative to the previous five-year average. On the fruit prices, peaches were down, sweet cherries were down, and tart cherries were down, apples and apricots were up. If you take a look at the cost of inputs, which is on page 8, fertilizer was down 14%, chemicals up 2%, fuel up 6.3%, machinery down 2.8%, seed up 2.3%, feed down 14%, herbicide up 2.7%, insecticide up 2.9%. The average of all of those, when you go ahead and put them in a budget, it comes out to where the cost did not change significantly from the previous five-year average. So this is the first time that we've seen where the cost did not go up based on this five-year, or excuse me, the last year's average. Not the five-year, but the last year. Notice that the CPI changed a lot less than most of the movement that occurred with the other costs, which we are using the producer price index rather than the CPI because the producer price impact index, excuse me, reflects the price that producers pay for inputs. And so that's the reason we've gone to the PPI, which is the producer price index. On crop yields, you'll notice that you have a table there of crop yields. There are 6 years of data there. And what I wanted to call your attention to was that we would drop the year 2008, we would add the year 2013, and because of the higher level in 2008 relative to 2013, the actual average would go down on yields. And you can take a look at that for each of the other crops now. Corn grain went up. The average would go up on that one. Corn silage wouldn't change. Oats went down. Wheat went up just slightly. And then safflower, we only have good data on those for 2 years. But you can see what a tremendous movement has taken place in safflower in yield. If you go to the next page, these are general trends affecting productive land values. The first is the crop prices. We've already talked about what happened with those crop prices. Now, we present in Table 5 the crop prices for 2012 versus 2013. Keep in mind that the numbers in the far right portion of that table represent a five-year average. It's not just a comparison with what happened between those 2 years. But just to show you what the differences are between 2012 and 2013. We've done the same on fruit prices in Table 6. The one that went down the most, the only one that went down actually in terms of price five-year average was peaches. The others were up, as we indicated, apples were up almost 14%. on the cost changes, as I indicated to you, those cost changes essentially balanced out. We still have declining value of the cost of capital or lending because of the five-year average. The other thing I'd like to call your attention to is the longer the average period, the smoother those lines become. And so there's a trade-off between getting rid of all of the ups and downs and how smooth you want that curve to be. But we've elected to do this five-year average because it's consistent with the other averaging that we've done. Crop yields mostly decreased. Wheat and oats increased less than 2%. Corn silage yields remained the same. And that's shown, again, in Table 7 and Table 8 on the fruit production. So you can see we had some major increases in fruit production, the biggest of which was sweet cherries, just in tonnage. Apples account for about 52% of all the fruit production in the state, followed by tart cherries at 25%, peaches at 18.5%, and sweet cherries and apricots accounting for the remaining 4.5%. So there's quite a mix there in terms of what's happened. As we said, the crop mix on a county-by-county basis is still based on the 2007 census. That will be changed next year. It'll be based on the 2012 census, and so that we have a more accurate picture of what's happening in the counties. It changes quite a bit over a five-year period. So I think what I would do is call your attention to Table 8. These are the actual suggested or proposed farmland assessment values for this report, which of course would not be in effect until 2015. Is that right, Dan? So I think with that, I would be happy, Commissioner, to answer any questions anybody has or concerns.
Does anyone have any questions? Denny, do you want to come up and make some comments?
Do I want to make comments? No. I would be glad to come up and sit by me.
That would be
and look pretty.
I want our new camera to get it. Do you want to go over anything? Or is everybody comfortable with
we can answer any questions, I'm sure, that anybody has.
Yes.
I picked 2009 because here it is 2014.
And it's 2012. That's correct.
We're not incorporating the 2012 census data.
That's correct.
So my question is why was the 2007 census incorporated in 2009 and not that same scenario today?
For the record, would you state your name?
I mean, that's an excellent question, and the problem was that we did not receive a copy of the 2012 census until it was too late to incorporate it into this document. I suspect it was earlier than what we received it, but we.
And part of that is when I talked to Joel, this is Robert Lee. Thank you. Joel, I can't remember his name, the USDA, the NAS, they got with the budget cuts, like the sequestration last year, their staff is like half of what it has been up until last year. So they're just slower getting information out is the way he kind of explained it to me. And part of it, like I said, we were working on this and it didn't come out in time for me to use it in figuring the stuff. But part of it is they're just not getting the reports out as quickly as they did in the past.
But we will certainly have it in next year, and the next time the census comes available, we will do our best to get it in. It's just a problem of timing.
Then on page, may I follow up?
Sure.
Commissioner, page 12, just editorially here, middle of page 12, you have a table 8, then page 16, a table 8.
Thank you. The last one should be table 9. Thank you. I think we added a table this year and didn't get the last one renumbered.
The last columns in tables 1 through 8, the color code is down, up. I don't recall those being in previous years. It's sure, if they were, I've forgotten, but sure are helpful the way you outline those for us.
I reviewed that and I don't think they were in color either.
Okay.
So that's a very good addition. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else? Commissioner Valentine, would you like to add anything?
Just a real quick kind of a gee whiz question.
Okay.
Why was Sapphire down so much? Why is it going down so much from 2011? Climate or what's going on there?
From 2011?
Well,
which page are you on?
Yes.
Talk about production.
I see a big production.
Oh.
And then we see a slight bump up again.
The yields. I think it had to do with precipitation last year. 2012, it would have been precipitation. There was a bump up this year because there was more precipitation.
Okay.
I think that's almost exclusively related to precipitation.
And it's not usually grown under irrigation.
No,
it's not usually grown under
dry
irrigated.
Land. So
okay.
I think
just,
that's the explanation.
Just for my own information
yeah.
background. Thank you.
Most dry land crops would show that sort of variability because of precipitation.
But the wheat didn't show that kind of a big drop, and that's oftentimes dry land.
It is, but the dry land values where they would just consider wheat for those budgets are quite variable too.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments? This is too easy this year. Dr. Snyder, we would like to really appreciate you adjusting your schedule.
That's fine. Happy to do so.
Thank you.
My students appreciated it too.
They'll probably give you extra credit.
Yeah.
Well, then that moves us up to item number 6. This body, it's an action item. This body will have to vote on this report, and then we will make a recommendation to the Utah State Tax Commission, and this will be approved in our commission meeting on the 9th.
Next week? Yeah,
on the 9th.
Thursday, we'll get applied, but.
Yeah. So, and item number 6 says, recommendation to the Utah State Tax Commission for a range of values for land in the various areas of the state based upon productive capabilities of the land when devoted to agricultural uses per Utah Code Annotated 59-2-514. Any questions? All right, let's take a vote on it. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. So from this, we will, the property tax will develop or change Rule 884-24P-53 with these new values. And that's what we will vote on next week at the commission meeting to send up to the Hill. So that it can satisfy the 30-day period for public comment, and then it'll come back to us at our December meeting?
Yeah, December
11th.
We probably ought to talk about the issue that you and I talked about, just to mention it to them, and maybe get their input on what would be best.
Okay.
Well, we're now to seven, other items? You want to handle that in there?
Other items.
Then you just keep things moving along.
Can I get you a glass of water?
Would you please?
Sure.
We are in the position of having to do some major work on fruit budgets, and those take a significant effort. And I spoke with Denny about this because of the problem and the time it's going to take to do those. And I think what that will mean is that we will probably not update any county crop budgets. We will focus on the fruit budgets this year. That will mean that we fall a year behind on our county budgets, but I don't know how to do that given the amount of money that we have. It can't be both of them. I guess that's the issue that I see.
And his question was that if we could come up with some additional funds for 1 year, he could potentially do both. And that's something I told him that I would need to talk to my management about and see if we could come up with enough additional money to help with another grad student. So they could do both parts of it, but if they can't, then we're just gonna have to push the normal study off for a year and maybe just update the, trend them.
Well, we can still update the prices and the cost and the yields. What we won't be able to do is go into the counties and update the county level budgets.
Normally that's done every year.
Right. We do some of them every year. We can't do all the counties at one time. It's too intensive.
But his recent history, it's every other year or third year?
It's probably every 6 years we update. We get through the counties.
This would shift that schedule back 1 year?
Yes. We would still update the existing budgets. We just wouldn't have, for some counties, new budgets from which we could operate.
So are you going to make a proposal to get additional funds then?
Or you've
already done it?
No. I just heard about that. But yes, I will be talking to Barry to see if we can come up with some additional funds for just next year. But one-time money is difficult to... Well, it's going to take probably at least 10 and 15 to make it a little easier to get another person.
1,000.
Yeah.
Would Duchesne like to...
So yeah, that would be our first option, is to seek additional money for next year. If that doesn't work, I think it doesn't seem unreasonable to, although next year would be the incorporation of the 12 census.
We can do that.
And then that would still be okay.
Yes.
So the crop mix would be updated.
Mm-hmm.
The crop mix would be updated. It just would be, we won't have time to update any county level budgets.
So frankly, the impact on the final valuations would be minimal.
Yeah. I just wanted everybody to be aware of that.
Anything else? Anybody want to say?
Commissioner, you won't recall these discussions we've had in recent years because you obviously haven't been here, but there's been some discussion around this table of wanting to educate the landowners, agriculture landowners, on this process. Over the years, Denny will agree, others will agree, there's just been some miscommunication, misunderstanding on how these prices or evaluations are determined. And so Garrel Osborne, in his wisdom, has put together a fact sheet specific to each county that copies and pastes some of this data out of this report with some explanation of what it takes to qualify for Greenbelt, among other things, and has given that information to the Farm Bureau earlier this year, and we have helped distribute that out to many, many thousands of agriculture farmers and ranchers, all in the spirit of education of how these land values are determined. It's not a, as we all know, it's not a cut and dried equation. It takes repetition to get it down. And been very helpful, very educational. The partnership has been tremendous. In fact, Gerald's been to a convention. He's coming back to another to help continue to drip that message out. And I just want to put that in the record. Very, very helpful.
Well, before I attended or came to this meeting, I listened to the tape from last year, and that was brought up and discussed at that time. So this is like an update on what has happened since then. So thank you.
Of course, it takes an annual update given this report.
Commissioner, if I might ask, I can make a change in the table numbers by tomorrow. That's not a terribly difficult issue.
No,
and I can get it sent back down. Would you prefer a word or okay? Thank you.
Nothing else under other items? We need to set a date when to have our electronic meeting to approve the minutes for this meeting today. Now, last year, you had it around November 12th. Krista, do you have a calendar? It's not liking me. And I didn't bring my phone. Anybody got a phone?
I didn't bring mine either.
The week of the 12th, the 11th is Veterans Day.
Okay, we don't want that. And I think they had it last year, the day after the holiday. So what would that day be?
Wednesday the 12th.
Would that work for everyone? I know.
If I'm not on the golf.
You.
It's about the only time I golf. But.
Well, the only way I'm going to let you off then is if you take me with you.
Come on now.
Would that day work?
Pardon for me.
What time did we have that last year?
It was at 11 a.m.
Okay. If we set 11 a.m.? And we'll all do this by phone, and as long as we have a quorum, we can approve that, and then that will go in for approval on the Park Commission. All right, so let's say Wednesday, November 12th, 2014, at 11 a.m. Any other business? Gee, this was too easy. Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you very much for all of you coming from wherever you came from.